Thank you for being here. And I would like to start with just a little tiny bit of a lecture, some thoughts that I've had as I've contemplated this composition class for the last 6 months. I'd like to talk a little bit about the need for writers and how important it is that we raise a writing generation. I think we could arguably say that writing is we could make a good case for writing being the most accurate and important channel for passing information from generation to generation that there is. In fact, I think it is because of illiteracy that we have lost a lot of information from people who have learned a lot of things that they couldn't pass down to us because of illiteracy. And that concept is so hard, at least for me in school, it is so hard for me to get that across to my students because they're so used to everybody being able to read and write. They're just like, it's not gonna happen. We won't forget how to read or write. It's especially not going to hinge on this next composition class, is what they would say. You just forget it. You may as well just be quiet. So, but I'd like to say it is super, super critical, and it's easy for us teachers to lose this. When we speak, people will remember what we say for a while, and it's also true that since we have reliable recordings, those recordings actually might get passed down for some years, in contrast to how it used to be, right? So 300 years ago, it wasn't that way. But it's still true that what I tell my son, and he passes verbally to his son, and he passes verbally to his son, and so forth, when that happens, things get altered. It goes through everybody's filter, and they get altered, right? And I think that's also why we have the creation story and so many variations and all the different types of cultures and religions that we hear about, right? Because it got altered. I think that it is also one of the best exercises that we can do for ourselves mentally and for our children, for our brains. Great, great, solid exercise. I say writing is probably the most difficult way to communicate. And if you have pushback for that, I'd love to hear that later. But I think writing is one of the most difficult ways to communicate because you have to think of what you are saying, manipulate those words into written text, and get it on paper. And by saying it is difficult, I'm not trying to promote skipping it. I'm trying to say we need to just put more effort into it and do it. It is that good for us, and it is that critical that we do it. Finally, if we're going to write, we may as well write well, right? We should. I think we need to write well if we're going to write. There's no sense that we just kind of slog our way through life, and everybody dreads it. And I'm speaking to myself, first of all. It can be very, very difficult for me to always be inspired to write. And this one is not about inspiring writing. That's not what this class is about. There is another whole side to the writing thing that I would love to talk about, just writing inspiration. But what I would like for us to be thinking about now is that it is a common misconception that it is just something that is saved for people who are endowed with the gift of writing. And that's not the case at all. All right? I would like to say it is just like doing push-ups. The more you do, the more you can do. It's much like baking pies. Did you ever notice, who bakes the best pies in your community? And for those of you who are married, don't say your wife, please. Unless she's a grandma. Did you know that's who bakes the best pies in every Anabaptist community I know of is grandma? And I've been thinking about that because often as we get older, we tend to lose certain skills. But grandma makes the best pie. And I really think it's just because of experience. I don't think obviously measuring cups haven't changed. Recipes probably haven't even changed that much. But grandma makes the best pie just because of experience. And it's much that way because of practice, and it's much that way with writing. Just because you can't write doesn't mean you shouldn't write. All right? All right. Jordan Peterson has said something to the effect that the most dangerous person in the room is the one who can articulate his point well.
You said that?
Do you agree with that? Do you agree with that? The most articulate person in the room is probably the most dangerous person in the room. I think that pretty much nails it. And I have a little more context for this, so I listen to a lot more of it. But I also would like to say that if you can articulate an idea well on paper, you can do the world either much harm or much good with that writing. So be very, very careful. The other thing I would like to say before we get into the mechanics of it, paper doesn't forget. Kind of along the same line, but paper doesn't forget. There are things that I wrote when I was really young that I'm very, very happy aren't published because I've changed my opinion. Things have changed. Life has changed me. So be careful. Be very, very careful what you write and what you promote. Back to Jordan's statement about the most dangerous person in the room. I've also tried to craft my words more carefully since he said that, or since I heard him say that. I've tried to not pack my sentences so full of fluff and just, did you know there's, just because people can talk fast doesn't mean they're saying anything. And there could just be a lot of rhetoric and a lot of diluted, you know, I think of, well, don't they say, what is mouse poison? How much active ingredient is in mouse poison? Like very, very, very little. It's really, really, really diluted. And I think it can be easy for us to spend a lot of time talking and not saying much. So let's use our writing and our words carefully. Try not to fill it up with, an astonishing amount of useless jargon. On the other hand, I have read various writers that make it really hard for me to lay down my pen and my highlighter, and I keep looking for the punchline, and it feels like everything is a punchline, and I'm not sure where to. So allow me to read just a little bit, and if you could permit me to read this, not so much based on the content, I do like the content, but the way he writes it is just beautiful. All unannounced and mostly undetected, there has come in modern times a new cross into popular evangelical circles. Does anybody know who I'm reading? Does anybody know what the title is of what I'm reading? I had completely forgotten about this article, and I was studying this morning early, and I was trying to think of people who have really impacted my life, writers who are no longer alive and have really impacted my life. And actually, one of them was George Brunk. I don't know how much of George Brunk you've read, but he has some, that sword and trumpet thing, I tell you, he had a sword going. It was, and some trumpeting going. It was quite amazing. This is the old cross and the new. Now do you know who it is? Know the author, anybody? And I love that title, for instance. The old cross and the new? A.W. Tozer. This is Tozer. And I'm only going to read a really small portion of this so we have time to discuss composition. All unannounced and mostly undetected, there has come in modern times a new cross into popular evangelical circles. It is like the old cross, but different. The likenesses are superficial. The difference is fundamental. From this new cross has sprung a new philosophy of the Christian life, and from that new philosophy has come a new evangelical technique, a new type of meeting, and a new kind of preaching. This new evangelism employs the same language as the old, but its content is not the same, and its emphasis not as before. And I don't know if you've had a chance to read anything on your paper so far, but he does so much repetition for paragraph cohesion. It is just shocking. And I don't have any idea whether he was taught how to write or if he was so gifted that, anyway. The old cross would have no truck with the world. Isn't that neat? The old cross would have no truck with the world. For Adam's proud flesh, it meant the end of the journey. It carried into effect the sentence imposed by the law of Sinai. The new cross is not opposed to the human race. Rather, it is a friendly pal, and if understood aright, it is a source of oceans of good, clean fun and innocent enjoyment. It lets Adam live without interference. I need to keep going here. Let's go to this part. The new cross encourages a new and entirely different evangelistic approach. The evangelist does not demand abnegation of the old life before the new life can be received. He preaches not contrast, but similarities. He seeks to key into public interest by showing that Christianity makes no unpleasant demands. Rather, it offers the same things the world does, only on a higher level. Whatever the sin-mad world happens to be clamoring after at the moment is cleverly shown to be the very thing the gospel offers. Only the religious product is better. The new cross does not slay the sinner. It redirects him. It gears him into a cleaner and jollier way of living and saves his self-respect. To the self-assertive, it says, come and assert yourself for Christ. To the egoist, it says, come and do your boasting in the Lord. To the thrill-seeker, it says, come and enjoy the thrill of Christian fellowship. By the way, I'm guessing he wrote this in the 60s, just for some perspective here. This is the last part I'm going to read. The old cross is a symbol of death. It stands for the abrupt, violent end of a human being. The man in Roman times who took up his cross and started down the road had already said goodbye to his friends. He was not coming back. He was not going to have his life redirected. He was going out to have it ended. The cross made no compromise, modified nothing, spared nothing. It slew all of the man, completely and for good. It did not try to keep on good terms with its victim. It struck swift and hard, and when it finished its work, the man was no more. And do you see why when reading A.W. Tozer, I have a hard time figuring out what to highlight? He just goes on and on and on with writing like that. All right, for years, literally years, I struggled, and I still struggle, to keep students inspired to write. I've tried various methods and gotten various results, but at the end of the day, I feel like what I was missing was a tool or maybe a set of tools for them to put in their toolbox to be able to write even though they didn't feel particularly inspired on a certain day or at a certain class. And that is what I have found in this book. That's what I found in this book. This book has become a real asset for my classroom and is a tool for me to be able to help them to write regardless of inspiration. Now, disclaimer number one, do I think you will do your best writing uninspired? Absolutely not, right? If your students do lack inspiration though, and their only excuse is, oh, I don't know what to write, or I don't feel like writing, or I just can't, and I have had students sit there, and I'm sure you have too. I can remember one in particular who sat the whole way through writing class, and I actually felt like it ended up being a matter of obedience. You know, you sit there and you say, write, and you walk away and he doesn't write. And you try saying and you try and spot, and he doesn't write. What do you do? I mean, he's in what, 6th, 7th, 8th grade? And he doesn't write. When you have the tools that this book offers, I feel like those students, if he was having a brain block, he would have something to work with, is what I felt like. I can also testify to writing and becoming inspired while writing. Can you testify to that? So I can, I've not really felt that inspired. I just enough self-discipline to get out the computer and start pecking away. And the first thing I knew, it was actually kind of flowing. And I think that we should keep that in mind. So as we get our students to write and ask them to write, the inspiration might come. After all, we're not all Jeremiah. You know how Jeremiah said the words were just burning in him and they wanted to, how does he say? They're burning in me as a fire that I could not contain. I don't know. Anyway, so I haven't always found it to be that way. The second thing is, please do, whenever you have a chance, get your students to write about what they do care about and what they're passionate about. I'm standing here acting like writing can become a mechanical thing or can be done mechanically, and it can. But every time you can, try to pick something out that your students want to write about. For instance, and then I get a lot of pushback for that too. So I have students who I'll say, write about something you care about. What is going to be a typical 6th grade response to that or 7th grade response to that?
I don't care.
I don't care about anything. Yeah, I don't really care about anything. And sometimes I wonder if they really care about anything or not. But I have discovered that if you start asking them some questions, they really care. For instance, I had a student one time who was she was such a cat lover. And she didn't seem to care about a whole lot of things. But I tell you, when I brought cats up and said how pesky they are, and how disgusting they are, and how they're always underfoot, and how they're constantly at inappropriate times coming and rubbing against my leg, that got that girl going. And I all of a sudden realized that she cared about cats, and she was passionate about what she had for a pet. Is that something to write about? Sure. Great, great material. So good one for boys. So why do boys care about brand names I don't really care what it is, a bow, trucks, tractors, if you're in a farming community. Oh, yeah, if they say, oh, we don't really care about anything, say, well, you know what? I think Matthew's bows are just trash. I say, ah, no, and they really, really care. Or, I think bow hunting is actually kind of a lousy idea. Why would you take a bow if you can take a gun? Oh, then you get all the virtues of bow hunting expounded to you very, very eloquently, and you say, okay, write it down. And they're like, oh. Right? So there are things that they are definitely passionate about. Or you might even just talk about books, ask them about books that they've read. Ask them about how it goes at nursing home, if they like nursing home singing. I don't know if your students like nursing home singing or not, but if they don't, and if they tend to make snide comments about it, have them start writing about it and see what they say. And it can be a great topic of discussion for you and your students, right? All right, now we're going to get to the mechanics part of it, and I have a question for you before we do that. What is your single biggest problem in your school? What's the single biggest problem when you go to... Not your school. I did not mean that how it sounded. What is the single biggest problem for you to get your students started writing? Anybody want to give us a thought on that? And we'll move to the marker board.
What to write about.
What to write about. Good. Keep it coming. Anything else? Or is that everybody's just kind of a common denominator here?
Maybe that and also just how to get started.
How to get started. Good. Anything else?
How to steer them away from inappropriate topics.
And again, you have to have a little perspective of where Jaden's teaching, but that is, I think that's increasingly a problem for us too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it is, even in strictly Anabaptist schools, I think it's increasingly a problem. How to steer them away from inappropriate topics. What else?
Just
This is kind of along Jaden's comment, but not to let your story get too gory, I have sixth graders who would love to just behead everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a first grader who did that. It was disturbing. It really was disturbing. I was not calling the school counselor.
Did
they
take her out of the staff reading?
Actually, they might have. I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. I really am not sure about that. Yes.
Well, kind of along the same lines, my students, like, most of them try to have everybody in the class murdered by the end of the competition sometime.
Really?
Or not murdered, but they should fall out of an airplane and die or something.
So I'd like to hear your feedback on this. How do we treat murder in compositions? Do you allow that? Yes.
Could just like the Bible does. If you say fell out of the airplane, that's fine. But if you say fell out of the airplane, his head split open, the blood splattered on my shoes. You see, we can be explicit. We can be graphic without being explicit. I'm not getting the right words.
Uh-huh.
That's the difference between the Bible deals with very graphic subjects.
Yeah.
But it doesn't give you the details to stick in your mind and be replayed.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't really have a problem with the airplane fall out of the airplane dying, but talking about how the bullet went into him and how it left his body and these kind of things.
Have you read First Kings recently?
Okay.
Until the dirt came out.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah. I'll be honest. I'm having quite a bit of check in my spirit about letting them write much about killing, to be honest. I am, because that's just me. We are about redemption and life and... Understood. 100%. Yeah, no, 100% understood. All right. But I do agree, content is an issue, yes.
But even without the, like, my students, they're lower in age, but they understood that they weren't to be killing, like, humans,
uh-huh.
but they were writing about animals, and a lot of them were dying, too.
Uh-huh. So yeah, yeah.
Even if you get away from killing humans, it's still...
Jonathan, would you have perspective on this for us? Is that a shift or not? Is that how children have always been?
I don't like being hunt. Swat flies I can handle. I do not enjoy, I have a gun, but I use it only if I absolutely have to, and you know, just nobody else will take care of the sick cat. I mean,
yeah.
I don't like that kind of stuff. Yeah. I now I'm going to another hobby horse, maybe I should write about this, that look at what happens with hunting in our communities. I mean, this is way up there in our Anabaptist communities.
Yeah.
Big game hunting is like old hat, common.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Yeah.
But that's not
so how about this? Let's just be careful that we can create, let's be careful that it doesn't take destruction and violence to fascinate our children. That's what I'm getting at. So in our Western culture, it's becoming more and more that way. And the more destruction and the more violence, the more fascinating. I think we need to be really careful with that. All right, let's go to paragraph anatomy. So we're going to talk a little bit about what I have written on the board here. And these are ways for us, or hopefully tools for us, to be able to get our students writing a paragraph. We'll start with just a paragraph. We have two different types of two different patterns for paragraph anatomy. You're welcome to take a picture of this later if you can read my writing. But basically we're looking at, for my students, I do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I skip these two, especially to get started. I will typically have them do a 5-sentence paragraph. The first one has to be the topic sentence. And then we have subpoint 1, subpoint 2, subpoint 3. So let's say the topic sentence is about how how bows have changed in composition over the years from how they were made before. They can actually get quite a bit of information into one paragraph. They do a little bit of research. They can say in the topic sentence what is happening. And if they list in the topic sentence the order of what they plan to talk about, that's actually pretty critical too. Then we can have subpoint 1, subpoint 2, subpoint 3, and conclusion. If your students become more and more involved in the further they go. So, and then if they have trouble with a subpoint, a lack of subpoints, just have them do a little elaboration as an alternate to coming up with another subpoint. Because what tends to happen, at least in my experience, is students will make up subpoints that don't actually come under the topic sentence anymore. Mm-hmm. So maybe sub-point one, elaboration, is actually all you're going to get. Now we're at one, two, three, four sentences. And there's nothing wrong with that. But these are just a couple little guides for us to be able to give them something to do right away. Here, here's a topic. Here's what after your composition class. This diagram can be used for a couple of different things, but the one thing that it can be used for specifically is if you would have them, maybe some of them are more visually oriented, if you'd make on the paper, have them draw an arrow, like that, an upside down arrow, and they would actually write their topic sentence in that, and then the other blanks be for the sentences that build or that are built under the topic sentence, and then a conclusion sentence, for them to be able to understand that this paragraph is its own unit. I think that can be helpful for them. I also think that if I am willing to give them a little bit of direction and then let them go with it, they will actually try it themselves. And they will actually write a paragraph. How hard is that? Especially if you've discussed it and come up with a variety of topic sentences as a class. They pick one that works for them and then they start writing. That is what I would use for paragraph anatomy. Just kind of a, so any feedback or anything on that you think looks like it wouldn't work in your school. Just give me some, either affirmation or pushback. I do not mind either one. Yes?
Is this the type of thing that needs to be started in the lower grades?
So somebody asked me what grade level this is going to be for. You can do this really early on. And we actually have, I have not gone over this book with our teachers yet because it's so new in our school. That's like full disclosure. I have not taught every single lesson in this book. It's set up for several years of teaching, unless you can really push writing in your school. You have to really, really push it to get through it in a year. So I think it'd be great. Yeah, I think it'd be fantastic. And you see how nicely it would pair with, for instance, Christian Light. You could just use formats like this and say, here, your writing assignment today. That's one of the reasons I like it so well. I don't nearly use everything from the book. I use the formatting. And that's, notice it says Jensen's format writing. So I'll use their formatting, our topics. Yes?
Will this only work for like an essay style? Would that work for a story?
Okay, yeah. So this is basically composition basically essay style, but you can do so many different, you can do like descriptive paragraphs, you can do compare and contrast, you can do definition paragraphs. There are a lot of different essays that you could put under this. I'm just trying to think offhand about a story. I'm not sure about that. I'd have to think about that a little more later. Whether you could specifically, yes, Angela.
I think you could try it, but maybe not all the time. Uh-huh. Especially if you're doing a creative writing project, I could see my third and fourth graders getting to see stuff.
Uh-huh.
Their ideas wouldn't flow.
Yes.
If they're trying to get their topic sentence on points. But I think it's a good thing to teach them.
Yes.
Maybe more structure writing.
There you go. What I found in this book is that it, again, just makes it possible for us to get started writing. That's what it makes it possible for us to do. And then we can critique it from there. We can talk about it from there. Now, I like to go so this is the basic idea. Another thing that tends to happen is we have very little cohesion. When we're done, we have very little cohesion. It's hard for them to pull stuff together. So this is probably the second strongest point that I like in his book. And that is, if you look at the papers, the first paper you got should say, and I like to do a little of this together. Where'd it go? In here. First paper you got should say Alfred drove the bus to the local church, right? Could we do just a little bit of this together up here? So let's do, using this sentence, John went to town. Paragraph cohesion is what we're after. Can somebody give me another sentence repeating the subject? John went to town, another sentence. Just short.
He took the car.
Except John.
Well, you must,
right?
John.
In this case, we must. Repeat subject. John took the car. Yeah, that's great. Next, you could actually use that one on the next one, right? John took the car. And now repeat subject as pronoun. Let's do something else.
He bought a burger.
Yeah, good. He bought a burger. Okay, what are the next instructions? Repeat subject with a synonym. So in this case, we have a compound subject. Joe and his brothers went to town. What shall we do there? Use a synonym to replace Joe and his brothers. And say something that they did.
The boys went to the park.
Yeah, Joe and his brothers went to the town. The boys went to the park. Very good. Would it feel a little more natural to say the boys ended up at the park or something like that? Okay, there we go. And the last one. Repeat one of the other nouns. So, Joe went to town. What's the only other noun of the sentence?
Town.
How can we repeat it? Any sentence for that?
Portland was absolutely packed with traffic.
Okay. And in this case, he wants us to use town. So we're going to say town was absolutely packed, right? And what I love about these exercises, he actually gives several exercises like this in his book, of which one of these I copy. Can you start writing? Go ahead and start writing on this Alfred one and be a little creative. We're going to take about, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes for this. I'm just going to keep it quiet. You're welcome to whisper to each other. Do the ones that you feel comfortable doing. I had my students do this particular one as a story. And oh my, it was so much fun for them to see what happened. Actually, speaking of death and violence, there were crashes in their stories. Yeah, the bus, I forget where the bus ended up. There were crashes in the stories. You remember that, Douglas? Yeah, there sure were. Okay, go ahead and write. And see how much fun this is to give cohesion to simple things like this. I want to have some of you read them, so just so you know. Yes, I'm sorry. No pencil. That's a good quote. Oh, here, just use mine. Actually, I'm not using it. I should have made sure we have pencils. Sorry. Do you have papers back there? You don't look too concerned about it. To it now, and I doubt we'll actually get to using it. You run out. Did you get them cleared, everybody? There aren't enough for everybody? Who's missing? Is anybody missing the second paper? One person, two, oh, a bunch. Okay. Douglas, just take another one and make about 10 more copies, please. Okay. Is anybody done? Maybe you're really fast and you got done? Stop with that because we got the idea, right? Everybody kind of got the idea of what's going on. Who wants to read theirs? Volunteer. Just go ahead and start reading it.
Alfred ran a red light. He slammed on the brakes.
A little louder, Jonathan.
Immediately, the children flew forward. The bus slid sideways through the intersection. Church was no longer on their minds. Their minds were on the danger. The bus bumped over the curb and smashed into a fire hydrant.
Ah, fantastic. Fantastic. Who's next?
Alfred picked up a group of people. He was happy to be alive. Afterwards, the children played in the bus. The bus was a mess. The church encouraged the youth to go out and clean up the church.
Okay, good. Yeah, Jaden, what do you have?
Alfred was a big one. He loved to eat junk food. Because of this, children laughed at him. Alfred's bus was old junk food wrappers. His church became a catch-all, and it's not as far as they got.
Hello, Jeff.
Alfred looked in his mirror. He saw a bus full of excited children. However, the children didn't know what was going to happen. The bus turned. Church's parking.
Yeah, okay, good. So you see how much fun we have with things like this, with exercises like this. And before they know it, they are writing a cohesive paragraph just by following directions. And I think that is where I have struggled. I know that's where I've struggled so much in teaching writing. When you are doing math facts and we're having trouble remembering math facts, what do? We recite them. But when you're having trouble writing, what do? Write? No, because we can't write. Oh yes, that is actually what we do. And we use templates and guides like this to help us to be able to write. Any other volunteers to read yours? We're going to go to the next part, if not, and I want to have some more discussion.
Jordan does.
Okay, go ahead, Jordan.
Elves embraced the town as BMW and got a ticket, so the children missed their appointment. The bus ran into Alfred's car. The church came to Alfred's house. His wife drove him away. Alfred steered his minivan to the church.
Very good. All right. I appreciate that a whole lot. Now, we're going to go to the next part. The next part we're going to talk about is how to build a composition from a thesis statement. You don't need to, oh no, I want to go over these first. Can you get the papers you just were given? Let's go over them first. This is for you to take home, and it's just a sample. These are different cutouts from this book, a sample from the book. I would really appreciate if you would use them for your students. This is for your personal use so that you can see why I like the book. Go purchase the book for yourself, please. This is just a sampling of various ones. Are you out again?
Yeah.
You might need to share until he brings in. How many more do we need? Raise your hand, please. One, two, three, four. There are four, so make another half dozen, please. All right. So the first one, it says, write an analogy paragraph. And by the way, that is after that you have thoroughly taught topic sentence, subpoint one, two, three, the different patterns. It's after you have thoroughly taught cohesion, paragraph cohesion. And then we work on an analogy paragraph. It says, write an analogy paragraph composed of seven sentences. The first sentence will be the topic sentence. The five body sentences will make the comparisons. And the last sentence will provide a conclusion of some sort. And then a process paragraph, same directions essentially. And a classification paragraph, same directions essentially. And lots of different ideas on here, of which they probably wouldn't all fit in Anabaptist curriculum, to your point this morning, Jonathan. I was feeling a little smitten when you were saying what you were in the achievement test presentation. Anyhow, all right, last thing that I would like to go over with you, I have quite a few things I'd like to go over with you, but two more things and then we're going to open it for discussion. If, where can I stand that you can see? So here where it says thesis statement, your thesis statement for your paragraph or for your compositions, and I like to work with, I like to work with five paragraph compositions, essays, five paragraph assignments, just five paragraphs. That's my favorite thing, to try to teach students how to enjoy writing. Let me do it down here. Part of the reason I like to stick with five paragraph essays is because they're doable. It's something that a student can actually manage doing. They're like, we need to write something. Well, how many words? And if you tell them five paragraphs, it doesn't feel like it's, for most students, it's not an outlandish amount of work, especially if they have been used to writing single paragraph essays. And if you do this all year long, at least for me, if I do it all year long, it seems to help a lot. Now, what is super, super critical is that they learn how to write a thesis statement. And this is critical for later in life, too. But if they can learn how to write a thesis statement, I wish you all could see over there, and what all is really important in your thesis statement, they want to learn that position, purpose, bias, format, order, and parallelism are a big deal. So let's suppose that you would have an assignment that says, write a short essay on the effects of Columbus's discovery of the New World in Spain. Sorry, of the New World on Spain. What effects did that have on the country of Spain? What if you were assigned to write an essay on that? Then when you're getting ready to write your thesis, they need to be thinking about, so from what position am I going to be writing this? And then they need to think about, what is the purpose of what I am writing? Thirdly, they need to be able to keep their bias out of it. So when they write the thesis statement, their bias is gone. And watch that really carefully when they write it. Fourthly, the format and the order and the parallel, these kind of all go together. So in the thesis statement, and I come back to this one again, in the thesis statement, it is really nice for a five paragraph format if you have your opening paragraph that says what it's about, has a thesis statement in it, and then you follow up with, so this would be your, this would be paragraph one, and then in paragraph one for a five paragraph, actually we call these BP because they're body paragraphs. For a five paragraph essay, in paragraph one, you're gonna give your thesis statement and you're gonna say what you are going to be exploring to come up with an answer for your question. So you might say that we're gonna look at immigration, we're gonna look at economics, and we're gonna look at wars. Because those three things would have affected Spain in a big way, big, big way. And you're gonna put that in the thesis statement, and then the parallelism means that you're gonna be writing them in parallel format, right? We know what parallelism, right, if we've taught any language arts. And when we get our parallel part put together correctly, then the body paragraphs will be built out of the thesis statement. So we have paragraph one, body paragraph one, body paragraph two and three, which I have two, three, and four, and then we have a conclusion down here. And do you see how you can use this same picture to do an essay now instead of just a paragraph? And students can really connect fairly well with that. They're like, it's a combination of paragraphs. Where you have too much information to just put in one paragraph, now we use several paragraphs. And therefore, it, I think, tends to feel more doable. The other nice thing about this is, in paragraph one, In paragraph one, you're gonna put your thesis statement in paragraph one, your conclusion at the end. Your conclusion is going to be repeating the sources that you cited. So because of this, this, and this, this is my conclusion. And they're gonna come from these three, which you had listed up there. So everything just feels like a really nice, tight composition. Now, you can do this about so many different subjects, which is why I find it so fascinating. And students can connect with it. And they can actually do it without an awful lot of inspiration. Again, I'm not trying to take away from the inspiration part. Please inspire them. Please do everything you can to inspire them. But when they're not inspired, they can't just sit there and say, well, I have no idea how to do this. Hopefully. I mean, they can say that. But hopefully you can make so they won't say that. All right. The rest of the time, I'd like to just open it up. Go ahead and should we have your stories next? I'd really be into hearing your stories. Elnora, what's your story? Okay, fantastic. She has never had students who didn't like to write. Tell us why.
They were given to me writing. I'm not sure, but what I tried to do is this last year when I had creative writing every day, except Friday, and we just did it for like about 5 minutes. I would give them an assignment. It wasn't always writing a story. Sometimes I would it was more teach them to write, like that writing can be fun. And I would just give them the first sentence sometimes, or sometimes I would just tell them words that start with L, so you know, words before, words that make you think of school, and we would see who can get the most words, and then I would set the timer, and they have to start writing right away, and write until the timer.
What if they didn't know what to write? What do you have them do? So, do you know what Dina says to that? Dina Swanson. She says if they don't know what to write, they're supposed to write, I don't know what to write, I don't know what to write, I don't know what to write, and just keep writing that until something more productive comes to their mind. But you've not had trouble with that.
No.
Fantastic.
I mean, a couple times they have to think a little bit, but yeah. Usually they know they're supposed to start writing, and they usually just start writing, and sometimes the beginning of their writing, but they usually
start writing. Okay, good. They recover nicely.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to be a bit... do a little sleuth work here. What age level do you think she teaches? Is there anybody here who knows what age level she teaches? You know? Okay. So I'm going to say below the level I'm teaching. Mm-hmm. And see, that's part... Are they below 7th grade? Yeah. So that's part of what I think is so tragic. And if we have teachers like Elnora who are keeping them engaged and the... What grade? 5th and 6th, okay. Oh, so just below 7th. If we can have teachers like you who keep them interested, and they, even from 3rd and 4th on, if you can keep them interested in writing to where they want to, it feels like that part of their creativity tends to shut down. Have you found it that way? I found that that part of their creativity tends to really shut down, especially in guys, the older they get. But fantastic. Writing every day. You timer, 5 minutes?
I time for 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I give a minute to specify, and then I give and the rest would hand them in, and I would slip them in a folder, they could read the rest and stuff.